Good evening, everyone. This is Goth Nerd Revelations with me, your host, Goth Nerd. And tonight, I wanted to talk about some horror tropes that you might find in things with certain kinds of characters. I wanted to cover, first off, evil children, which are in lots of horror. Lots of horror related content, because I mean I'll mainly be going over movies today, but I'll also cover a little bit of comic books and other media pertaining to this. But I'm talking about evil children, psychics, and evil children psychics. these are, as I said, sort of cliches that have been around for a long, long time. Now, it's really cool, interesting to see how they change it up over the years, what they do to kind of keep it fresh over the years. And, you know, what are considered the classics, even though something may be considered a classic, is it something that you consider to be still worth watching over these years? There are so many great films that have this cliche, and then so many that are kind of just repeats of the same thing over and over. I think a lot of the evil children stuff, because I'm going to start with that, and I think that kind of really started, when you really think about it, in the 1950s. There was a film in the 1950s, it was called The Bad Seed, and it's about this little girl that is just pure evil. She's just this horrible, horrible person. She gets people in trouble. She lies. She yells, she screams. And she even at many times downright tries to kill people. And this is something that also has been done over and over through the years. And as I said, The Bad Seed, the plot is, I mean, still a good movie, but it's just very basic. You know, you just have this bad girl who just it's like she has no conscience, and throughout the entirety of this film, she is just doing these horrible, horrible things. And, you know, at the end of the day, the mother has to basically ask herself, is the love of her child worth the evil that this child is just creating all over the place? Another more modern equivalent would probably be, and this was done in the early 90s, it would probably be, say, The Good Son with Macaulay Culkin. Which was also about, a kid who did the same thing. I mean, in this case, it was a little boy, but basically what was going on was he was doing these horrible, awful things. And what happened was Elijah Wood was his cousin, and Elijah Wood had just, he had lost his mother, and, it was almost like the two of them had a very different sort of stance on life. Elijah Wood, because of the loss of his mother and because of how close he was to her, It was almost like he saw how precious life was. And Macaulay Culkin's character was a character that just from a very young age, just it was almost like he had no conscience, and he just enjoyed inflicting pain on others, and said very much in the vein of the Bad Seed. The only difference is that in the Bad Seed, it was just basically the bad little girl, and it was the mother who had to ultimately decide to do something about this kid, because she clearly saw that this kid was bad, and that she would just do these awful things. The good son, they kind of did a little bit of slight variation on it, in the fact that Macaulay Culkin's character was very good at acting one way in front of society, but then in private he was just this horrible person. And like I said, and he would go off and do these bad things, but then he would, he would blame them on his cousin, to the point where, these people were buying it, thinking that Elijah Wood was this horrible, evil kid, and, and that basically he was lashing out because his mother had died, and, not really knowing that it was their lovely son played by Macaulay Culkin that was this horrible, just downright evil, spawn. And, but what happens is at the very end, Macaulay Culkin's mother, she does eventually find out that he's the bad kid, that he's the one doing all these things. Anyway, there's, but it culminates in the scene where, the two of them, the three of them are on the ice. Anyway, what happens, the mother is trying to, because what happens, the Elijah Wood and Macaulay Culkin have slid off the side of this cliff because there was an ice patch, and they slid on it because he was trying to run away and get away, and Elijah Wood was trying to stop him. And the mother catches the two, but what happens is, she's got one on each arm, but she can only save one of them. Because the fact of the matter is that she can't save them both. She has to use both arms to save one kid. And, in the end, she makes the hard decision, and she finally has seen the light. She knows what's going on. And she makes the hard decision that it is Macaulay Culkin that has to go, her own son. But saves Elijah Wood, who really, like I said, he was a really good kid, and he was just a very good person. So he was pretty much like the son that she didn't have. But it was still, but it's still that hard decision. It's one of those things that asks that moral question. If push came to shove, would you be able to, would you be able to make that decision, to pretty much end the life of your own child, because your child was just pure evil. But yeah, it's just a great sort of moral quandary. But even the Bad Seed kind of had that premise to it. But yeah, as I said, so it goes back a long, long way. Another really famous sort of evil kid story I have briefly mentioned this movie in many other episodes. In fact, I even mentioned it in my tribute to Richard Donner episode, which you should definitely check out, is The Omen. The Omen was directed by Richard Donner, and The Omen is the story of this couple who adopts this kid, and you know, hoping to give him a good life and everything. But what happens is, from the beginning, there are these red flags with the kid, and many people talk about it because they say that the kid is the Antichrist. But the parents don't want to believe it. You know, they just think he's just a kid that needs love, and you know, and basically they're gonna, you know, they're gonna turn him into a decent kid because they, you know, they're gonna give him a good, decent life. But throughout the course of the film, you see the kid, and the kid's name is Damien. You see Damien doing these things that pretty much, you know, it's like there are some things that can be considered coincidence at first. You know, things that could be like, okay, well, you know, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. You know, a random series of coincidences. But when they, especially the father, when they finally have to agree that there is something wrong with this kid, is when he basically tries to kill his mother. She doesn't die, but she is horribly hurt, and she gets put into a hospital. And what happens is, you know, and so the father's still somewhat in denial about the kid, but then what happens is, they tell him there's a mark that he has to look for. It's the mark of the beast, and the mark of the beast is the sort of pattern of triple sixes that would be on his head. Well, the father gets out a pair of scissors, famously, cuts a small patch out of the kid's hair and finds that mark. And after that, they can't deny, he can't deny that, that this kid is just pure evil. And, then pretty much throughout the rest of the film, it's the father basically having to, first off, come to grips with the fact that his own son is evil, and then after finally realizing he's evil, having to pretty much make the hard decision that his son must die if the world is to live, you know, because Damien is said to basically literally bring hell on earth. And as I said, it's pretty much one of the, it's in terms of evil kid movies, this is one of the ones that is considered, to be a huge classic. You know, so much so that, what's funny is, it's still revered even today, the original, 76 version. But the funny thing is they tried remaking it again 30 years later in 2006. And that film didn't actually do as well as the original. You know, it's and this shows you how much of a hard task it is. It is literally one of those movies that you know, you just, it's very hard to do a remake of that, just because the first time they did it with that very first movie, it was just done so well. Now, it actually did have several sequels. You know, there was Omen 2, Damien, where Damien is a teenager, but, you know, still creating chaos and havoc everywhere. But then, another one that most people may not know about was in the early 80s, they had an Omen 3. And in Omen 3, Damien is an adult, and he's famously played by Sam Neill of Jurassic Park fame. And by this point, he's working his way up so that he's basically worked his way into a position of authority where he's a world leader. And basically, basically going to destroy everything by his silver tongue, and he's basically become a horrible, evil, corrupt politician by then. And as far as sequels go, that's the one I would suggest. Second one still worth a watch, but I'm telling you, in terms of sequels, it's probably the third Omen that's probably not as good as the first, but it's up there. I would definitely put Omen 3 at a close second to the first movie. But that's not where evil children stop, and I had forgotten about this. I'm sorry, I'm gonna go back a little, but in the early 1960s, there was a British film called The Village of the Damned, which they famously actually remade in the early 90s, and that was actually a remake that actually was actually pretty good. But the original, you basically had this thing that had happened. Like, there was this weird kind of cosmic solar event, and it pretty much had put this entire English village to sleep for 24 hours. And when they wake up, all the women are pregnant. And then when they finally give birth 9 months later, they give birth to these white-haired children, and they have these glowing eyes, and you basically find out that these are kids that are like psychically linked to each other, and some horrible corrupt force is basically, they're evil demonic children, and the whole plan is to basically wipe out the entire population of that village, and basically take over as a small way on their way to sort of conquering everything, to replace the regular people that are there. And it's very good because they have, the remake was done pretty well. But I don't know. It's just with the original, there's just something about evil monotone British children, because the funny thing about that is, as I said, the remake was done really good, but the remake was, Americanized. But it was still good, obviously, because the remake was done by John Carpenter. It starred, Christopher Reeve, I forget her name, but she was in the Crocodile Dundee movies, and Kirstie Alley before she went crazy, it just had this really great cast. Oh, and you had Mark Hamill played as the priest in that one. You had a really great cast. And so, don't get me wrong, I love that remake. But I don't find the children to be as creepy or sinister as the original 60s British version, just because, as I said, I don't know what it is, but, when it comes to creepy, sinister villains, the British got that cornered, because, I don't know, there's something about that creepy monotone with, but done with a British accent that just makes it so much more creepy than maybe, say, a monotone American accent. not that American films can't be creepy in their own right, but it's just, I don't know, it's just, you know, the British have this whole thing that they can just be creepy just by their monologue alone, you know, it's like with Americans, we kind of have to be creepy by our actions more so than our words. That's what I'm saying. But that's where the British version has it is the best one. I would put it this way. The 1960s British version is the best version of Village of the Damned. But a close second would be the American remake that John Carpenter did. They have the sinister plan, and in fact the leader of this entire bunch of kids is this girl, and she has the most dominant personality. The others really sort of revolve around and follow her. And it really isn't until one of the group starts to question and challenge her that they're able to find a way to basically break away from the power of these children. Because the children, from a young age, they are exerting their dominance. And the adults are afraid to do anything because they have seen what happens when you challenge these children. The children will make sure that you end in a horrible, horrible fate. how it ends up that way. It's a great film. I could probably talk about the original and the remake all day, but I must move on. So I might dedicate another podcast episode to just Village of the Damned, but either way, check out both the original and the remake. Finally, ending on our creepy children, and there's so many ones we could talk about, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention Children of the Corn. If we're going to talk creepy children, Children of the Corn is one of the big ones that is held up high in terms of creepy children movies. Now, the premise of Children of the Corn is you have this village, and what happens is there's this sort of evil corn goblin or god or whatever, and pretty much what happens is it basically starts talking to the children and gets the children to rise up and kill all the adults in the village and basically sacrifice them to it. And what happens is there's this couple that's kind of making their way across country, and they just happen to stop in this town, you know, because they need to stay for the night and then basically move on, not knowing what had happened in that town with the children rising up and killing all the adults. And basically by this point, because, you know, when they first get there, it just, you know, it's at first sort of this kind of almost creepy ghost town kind of thing, but then the children show up, and then it becomes a survival movie. These two basically have to survive against this horrible group of just evil, corn goblin worshiping children. Famously had, Linda Hamilton, I believe she did this movie right before or right around the same time that she had done The Terminator. So she was on her way up at this point. But still, really, really, really great film. And the kids are led by this sort of insane child prophet who really, the way he speaks, it's very, very old world. And the way he pulls it off, it actually really makes him seem much more creepy, just because of the sort of old world way in which he speaks. Because it's almost like he's like a child. What's the word I'm looking for? But like a child version of like one of those infernal preachers, you know, the ones that basically like, you know, trying to put the fear of God in you and all that. But in this case, you know, the fear of the evil corn goblin. Yeah, I know it makes it so much more hilarious when I call it that, but that, I've been calling that for years, the evil corn goblin, but basically, yeah, whatever weird entity that they're sacrificing this to. Because, in fact, you never actually see the monster in the film. You see what it does, you see the after effects, but you never actually see the creature. But then again, you know, one could say that that's one of those less is more kind of approaches, which, you know, does work in some ways. Now, moving on from this, just so I can at least get to this point, going into the whole psychic thing, because, you know, I probably should have led into that with the whole Village of the Damned thing, but I had forgotten Children of the Corn. I didn't want to forget Children of the Corn. But you know, I'll lean into the psychics now, and occasionally, because it was funny, the big cliche in horror movies that feature psychics is that usually the psychic is evil and is using their powers to try and kill people. But then occasionally there have been a few, and I will talk about at least two of them, where you'll actually get a horror movie where the psychic is the good guy and they're trying to save everyone. Most of the time they usually paint them as someone evil. Famously, there was a Twilight Zone episode in the early 60s, and they even redid the story for the Twilight Zone movie in the 80s. There was a Twilight Zone sketch in the early 60s, as I said, and there was this kid who had this amazing psychic ability, and what he could do was he could make whatever he wanted physically manifest itself. Whether that be monsters or he could use his psychic gifts to harm people or whatever. But the whole point is he had his family scared of him. You know, you had this outsider who came in, saw this, and really was the only person who was willing to stand up to him, because everybody else had become so very scared of him that they did not dare challenge him. I think they had toyed around with certain things before, but I think this is really where you kind of had the sort of trend of evil psychics, psychics within a horror type scenario. Then another famous one, it came out in the 1970s, was based on Stephen King's very first novel, and you probably know what it is I'm talking about now, and that's Carrie. Carrie deals with a teenage girl who is very, very sheltered. And her mom's this religious fanatic. What happens is that Carrie doesn't know that she has this latent psychic ability and that certain, events will trigger it, certain things that she considers to be traumatic. And it's not, and this is not helped by the fact that that she's constantly made fun of, and as I said, she's a young woman who's going through, you know, normal things that young women usually go through, but she doesn't understand because nobody's there to basically tell her, oh, well, this is normal. This stuff happens, and this stuff happens when you are becoming a young woman. You know, one of the things is famously, you know, she has her period, and she doesn't know that that's normal. That's just basically, that's basically just something that women just naturally go through. But you know, she doesn't know that. She just think she just knows that she's bleeding and it won't stop and she thinks that. There's something wrong with her body, and this is not helped by the fact that the women in her school take this as an opportunity to make fun of her, and you know, and just and get her labeled as a freak, you know, and then as I said, and then her mother is not helpful in the slightest. Because she comes home, and instead of her mom basically sitting down with her and giving her a talk and basically saying, well, this is perfectly understandable, this is normal, you know, this is what happens when you're a young woman. No, her mother constantly ridicules her, you know, is, you know, saying these awful, horrible things to her, you know, that, You know, sometimes even going as far as basically saying that she's a burden on her. Her mother's a horrible person. And anyway, you know, but then something happens. Interesting enough, she gets because there's these two people in school who actually do feel bad for her. And this one girl basically asks her friend, and he's one of the cool jock guys, but he's actually not a dick. He's actually one of the people who's actually a pretty decent guy. This one other girl asks him if he'll basically ask Carrie to the prom, basically trying to do something nice because all the other kids are just downright horrible to her. It looks like she's going to the prom. It looks like her life is coming together. It looks like you might get a happy ending. But this is a horror movie. So what happens is you find out when she gets to the school that the one girl from the school who's like the worst to her, and like she's the one who gets other kids to make fun of her as well, so she's the instigator in the bullying, she's basically rigged the elections for prom queen. And she's basically made it to where Carrie's going to win. But here's the whole thing. She's not doing that to do something nice. Once again, she's the bully. So what happens is she's done this so that Carrie will be on stage when what happens is this girl has this filled up with I think it's like pig's blood or something. It's been a while since I've seen it, so please forgive my memory if I'm not 100% correct. She's gonna dump it on her, right after she, you know, basically takes the crown and the flowers. Which happens, but what happens is she doesn't count on what happens after Carrie is doused. As I said, because what happens is, and I'm sorry, I did forget to mention this. Like, the first time when she has her period, her psychic abilities start to somewhat manifest themselves. You know, nobody's too majorly hurt, but it's enough to show you that if triggered, her psychic abilities can be quite powerful. And anyway, when she gets doused at the prom, this triggers her again. But this time, it's even worse than the first time. And she basically traps a bunch of people into the auditorium and just murders and kills pretty much the majority of people there. There are only really a few survivors. She just walks her way home. And, you know, and then instead of her mother, you know, because what happens is, you know, instead of her mother basically at least trying to comfort her daughter somewhat, what happens is that the mother then tries to take the opportunity to, well, kill her daughter, sadly. And then the daughter basically ends up impaling the mother using her psychic gifts with a bunch of butcher knives from the kitchen, you know. And she's kind of like pretty much nailed against the wall, very similar to Jesus on the cross, you know, and then eventually the police come in and take her, but that's one of your sort of person who gets psychic abilities who eventually just does these horrible things, but then one could say it's a cautionary tale about basically be careful who you bully. But then another one that deals with psychic phenomena, and this goes both good and bad, but there's also famously The Shining. It was a book by Stephen King at first, and then Stanley Kubrick did a film on it. This one is actually a very, very good one. But as I said, it's got good and bad kind of with the psychic thing. You've got the little kid, Danny Torrance, who, has this psychic ability, in it, he basically has to use his gifts to basically try and save him and his mother, and I'm talking in terms of the film, and his father, Jack Torrance, famously played by Jack Nicholson, he actually also has psychic gifts. Now, I don't know if this is ever blatantly said in the movie. I'm pretty sure it isn't, because I just watched it as recently as a month ago. But what happens is that he, like his son, can see all the ghosts and spirits that live in that place. But whereas his son uses it as a way to, eventually, like I said, at first he's a little traumatized the mother tries to protect him, but eventually he uses it as a way to help him and his mother. What happens is with Jack, the spirits basically just start needling at Jack until he eventually just goes insane and tries to kill his family. But like I said, but it does have to do with a lot of psychic stuff. But like I said, it goes both ways, because as I said, like with Jack Torrance, his psychic gifts get used to basically finally just turn him into a psychopath. But in the case of his son Danny Torrance, Danny eventually uses his psychic gifts to help his mother and him escape. It's still somewhat ties into that whole, you know, psychic may turn you crazy kind of thing. It was also a theme that was dealt with again in one of the famous David Cronenberg films, Scanners. But once again, that goes a little bit with the Shining thing, good and bad, because in Scanners you have good psychics and then you have bad psychics. Famously in that story, you have these two groups of psychics that are sort of vying for control. You have psychics that are trying to use their abilities to benefit humankind. And then you have psychics that are basically trying to use it to control the world and make the rest of the world their slaves, or they will kill them. And this group is famously led by the main character's brother, and the brother is famously played by Michael Ironside in one of their famous roles. I mean, this and there's many a meme on this, okay? Many a meme. But this famously has the scene where Michael Ironside's character basically is, and then this was a kind of a famous thing, bulging veins in the face and everything, and then his eyes go white, and anyway, it makes the dude's head explode that's next to him. And eventually what it leads down to is there ends up being this psychic fight between the main character and his evil brother, as I said, who's played by Michael Ironside. And they have to fight against each other, one fighting for the future of humankind, and then the other one fighting so that so that psychics can basically rule everything. But then there was some where, like I said, where none of the psychics are actually bad people, where they just happen to witness these bad events and they try to help people. One famous film that I really like that does this is The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken. In fact, it's another film, hilariously enough, by David Cronenberg. But in this case, you don't have, like, the evil psychic. It's based on another Stephen King story. And what happens is there's this character, and he's a teacher. And what happens is it looks like he's got pretty much the ideal life. He's got a great girlfriend, or fiance, actually. He's got a great fiance who he's going to marry. He's got a great job, and he makes a very good steady income. So by all accounts, it looks like he's got this wonderful idealistic life. But by a sad chance, what happens is he ends up in a wreck, because there's this semi that turns over and he's not able to turn his car in time. Anyway, he ends up in a horrific wreck, which leaves him in a coma for 5 years. Anyway, when he wakes up 5 years later, pretty much what's happened is that everything's pretty much, his life has fallen apart. His fiance, and nobody can blame her. She was never told when he'd wake up from his coma. But 5 years later, his fiance has moved on. She's married someone else. And actually has had a kid with this new husband. His parents want to help him out, but they're both in bad health. Especially the mother, because the mother actually passes away shortly after that. Basically what happens is obviously he can't go back to his old job because that job has now been filled. So basically what you get is he's at square one. But what also happens is when he wakes up from this coma, he has this really strong psychic ability. Whenever he touches somebody, whether by handshake or whatever, he can see visions, the future visions of things that will happen. And what happens is he starts to use his ability to help people out. At first, he resents it, but then he finally embraces it. And what's great is Christopher Walken's performance in this. Because a lot of people like to make fun of Christopher Walken in the movies he does. I'll admit, he does have a funny way of talking. It's very William Shatner-esque. But the whole thing is if you look at his performance in The Dead Zone, it makes you feel for him, okay? He's got a very emotional performance in that movie. And I dare you not to shed a tear watching that film. It is one of those movies that does move you very emotionally. And before I wrap this whole thing up, I want to mention one last film that actually goes against the sort of psychic energy makes you a crazy person kind of thing. Another one that went against this, in addition to The Dead Zone, was in 2000 when Sam Raimi did the movie The Gift. Many of you may or may not have heard of this, but it's a movie starring Cate Blanchett, and what happens is she's the psychic and this is in the South. I think it was in Alabama, but somewhere around there. Anyway, what happens is that she will do readings for people, and she doesn't charge them for it. It's just kind of this little friendly thing. Anyway, what happens is at first it just, it just goes off like any other kind of, film like this. But what happens is there's a local girl that ends up getting killed. And what happens is that at first everyone thinks it's basically sort of the local asshole who's played by Keanu Reeves. They think he's the one who killed this girl, but spoiler alert, yes, the person who actually killed her was the guy she was supposed to marry, but it was due to the fact that it had drove him insane because he had found out that she was basically sleeping around with everybody, and she was only marrying him because of the prestige and money that she would get. So he ended up horrifically murdering her. Cate Blanchett uses her psychic gifts to help her out. But then also through the course of this, there's a subplot involving another character who's got these emotional problems, but he doesn't know why. And you find out that it's because his father had been sexually abusing him when he was a young boy. There's a little subplot involving that as well. Really, really great movie. And like I said, directed by Sam Raimi, the guy who directed all three Evil Dead films. Definitely worth checking out. And what I said, another reason I love it is because it goes against the whole sort of psychic energy drives you crazy kind of thing. Like I said, a few movies did that. And the ones I think that did it the best were the one two I just mentioned. The Gift, obviously. And then also very specifically The Dead Zone, which is really good. And that one actually kind of technically got a remake. Not so much in a movie, but they had made a TV series starring Anthony Michael Hall, and that one's actually really worth looking into, and I think they did a good job with that. So once again, in terms of remakes, that was another one that's definitely worth checking out. Like I said, I kind of like it when you'll have a film and it finds a way to take something that might be a cliche thing and then do something different with it. But not in a way that that's catering. Because I've seen many films where they will take a trope but do something different with it, but the different thing they do is catering to a certain audience. When they change things up, what I like to see them do is something that honors the original material, but at the same time does its own thing with it. you know, something, you got a little bit of something for everybody, you know. You got something new for somebody who doesn't want to see the same thing over and over again. But you've got something that also honors what came before, so that it doesn't feel like it's a slap in the face to people who, it doesn't feel like it's a slap in the face to people who love sort of the material that it's inspired by. But either way, no, like I said, and then these are just kind of various different films. And as I said, I may expand on this some more. But yeah, like I said, so, you know, I just kind of wanted to go through a series of films that I feel really, really encapsulate the sort of evil children slash, you know, horror psychic kind of thing, you know. And the ones that kind of go in between, that kind of bridge that gap. Yeah, once again, check out the original Village of the Damned. That's very good. Anyway, you know, this is probably an episode that might only appeal to a certain amount of people. I realize that, but hey, if you stuck with me throughout the course of this episode, thank you for you know, listening to this, checking it out. I do try to have some episodes that do appeal a little bit to a wider audience, but at the same time, you know, the reason I started this podcast was to basically talk about things that I find interesting, things that I really enjoy. And hey, talking about various kind of horror stuff is something I also enjoy as well. Yes. I like talking comic books. I like talking video games. I like talking all sorts of geek culture, but that also includes horror movies. I'm a horror geek as well, you know. And so, you know, this may be an episode that only appeals to other horror geeks. But hey, as I said, if you stuck around and listened to this whole thing, you know, hey, God bless you. But anyway, now it's about time that I got to my novel and comic book recommendations. So, hey, talking about that, and there's plenty of ones that go with that, but, you know, there are plenty of really great, you know, stories about this kind of thing. So, in terms of novels, I'm going to go with my favorite one that has to deal with psychic stuff. And hey, probably very much like the film, one of the films I just mentioned. But, you know, I'm going to give you a twofer. I'm going to recommend both the novel version of The Dead Zone and also the novel version of The Shining, which I said also has to do with the psychic stuff. Now, the Shining book is a little bit different because there's a bit of a redemptive story arc for the father in the book, in the fact that the father actually, in the end, sacrifices his life to save his family. But like I said, in the Stanley Kubrick film version, which I still love, by the way, and I do like this, it ends on more of a sort of, the mother and son survive, but the father ends up freezing to death in this large sort of hedge maze that's out there. And then The Dead Zone. Well, in fact, I would very much say that if you watch the Christopher Walken movie version, it's actually very close to what the book is. You know, as I said, you basically have this guy who has to rebuild his life after an accident, and then uses his gifts to help people out, and eventually finds out that there's this guy because he's like running for senator where he lives, but then he finds out that eventually the guy is going to run for president, get president, and then simultaneously start World War III. And then eventually what happens is the main character has to make the hard decision that he has to basically kill this man before he destroys the world. You know, almost the kind of like, if you knew Hitler was going to kill 6 million Jews and you had the chance to stop him, would you? you know, that sort of question. So yeah, definitely check them both out. So read both those novels, Dead Zone and The Shining. Really great novels from Stephen King. Now, my comic book recommendation for tonight. I'm going to be honest in terms of in terms of my comic book reading. I haven't read too many stories about psychic characters within comic books, but that doesn't mean I haven't read any. Now, one I do want to recommend, and they actually, you know, I'm going to recommend both the manga adaptation, both the manga and the anime adaptation, and I'm going to recommend Akira. Akira is a really great story that also has to do with psychics. Yes, it does kind of play into the whole trope of psychic turns you, psychic makes you crazy kind of thing. But still a very, very good story. You have this kid who's part of this kind of street biker gang in this cyberpunk-esque kind of future. What happens is he finds out that he has this latent psychic ability, and that he could be sort of like his powers could be used to help benefit humankind. But unfortunately, what happens is very much like another character who had the name Akira. What had happened was there was an event which basically caused Akira to almost destroy the world using his psychic power, and it was almost like an atomic bomb going off. And what happened was Akira basically died during this event, and they had collected all his remaining body parts. It had like his brain, his and many organs that were left over. But anyway, the main character who has the psychic gifts, it ends up driving him insane, and unfortunately, instead of using it to benefit humankind, he basically goes on this sort of revenge spree to basically get even with the people who had treated him badly. And eventually, it culminates in the fact that his own ability starts getting too overwhelming for him. And eventually he basically starts getting to the point where he starts his ability starts growing too fast, and his body can't keep up with it, and he just turns into this huge lump of flesh, which is basically going to destroy itself at any time. And then unfortunately, one of his old friends has to be the one to basically take his life. But yeah, very, very good. Very, very good. And so I said, I recommend both. Check out both the anime version and definitely check out the manga version. You know, it's kind of got a bit of a nihilistic, kind of look at it, but if you love cyberpunk and you love stories about, psychic abilities, it's definitely worth checking out. That's about it for tonight's episode. Want to thank you all for listening in, and every single one of you who listens to the show and enjoys this show, I just want to really thank you all for that. And hey, with that all being said, I hope you all have a wonderful evening, and I will see you all again in the next episode.